This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Can you believe this?
Oh, right out of them. Say it with your chest.
Looking to push tempo here, the Pelicans.
He'll get there. Bunny hops into a bucket.
Hold that follow through.
He posed.
That's right.
This is what takes you to another level.
What the Pel is up, everybody? This is Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans, but you already knew that. I am your host, Elliot Clough. Thanks so much for tuning in today. If you missed yesterday's episode, talked a little bit about LaMarcus Aldridge, his injury that will leave him out for the rest of the season and the playoffs, so the Spurs effectively out of the playoffs. Andrew Lopez's recent tweets and updates on the roster. My thoughts on Kenny Hustle. And there's an article out on said thoughts as well. They're over on The Bird Writes. And a little bit more. Talked about a little bit more on yesterday's podcast as well. And today we have got one of our most high profile guests thus far. Ollie Cosell, editor and chief of The Bird Writes with SB Nation. Awesome stuff today with Ollie. We went over a lot of that stuff that I had mentioned previously. We've also got some other updates in terms of players possibly not really wanting to participate in this regular season playoff scenario that we've got going on going forward for the NBA. Talk about options to go forward other than Kenny Hustle and some other stuff related to the Pelicans bench and the Pelicans future. So really fun podcast today with Ollie Cosell of The Bird Writes. Stick around. It's going to be fun. All right. We are joined by Ollie Cosell of The Bird Writes and SB Nation. Super excited to have Ollie today. Ollie just put together an article on The Bird Writes that we'll be talking about a little bit today. Also just joined Pro Pels Talk, and he's been on the scene with The Bird Calls as well. So we greatly, greatly appreciate Ollie stopping by today. How are you doing today, boss man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me, Elliot. Yeah, I've caught some of your pods. Love what you do, and I'm glad that you are on our team. So yeah, this is good.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm very happy to be a part of the team. Happy to network with some other Pels guys. Having a blast right now. The podcast trending upwards and getting some attention on Twitter. Whether it's positive attention or not, that is up in the air, but we've been getting attention nonetheless. So, dive right in today with you, Ollie. You made sure to point out in this recent article that you put together for The Bird Writes in terms of the Pelicans' chances to make the playoffs, to get that 8 spot or 9 spot, you made sure to point out that all the teams that are going to be going into the remainder of this regular season, these 22 teams playing 8 games, you made sure to point out that these teams are probably going to be pretty rusty, and we've seen that at the beginning of seasons previous as well, including the year that we had that lockout, including just basically every year that we get into basketball in general, but these players are probably going to be rusty. These teams are going to be rusty come playoff time, come these next two games. Sorry, next eight games. How long do you think it takes the Pels to get into a groove going forward into these next few games?
You know, I mean, that's a great question, you know, and every team, of course, wants to hear an answer that says soon or quick, right? But you really don't know, and that was the point of my article. Basically, every season, you start off with sloppier play. That's just the way things work. Now, this will be more interesting because the games obviously mean so much more, right? It's going to be playoff atmosphere for all the teams trying to get into just a play-in tournament or grab an eighth or a ninth seed. So will they be more focused? Will they take less chances? You know, you don't know, but just like I said, based on history, teams are just generally rusty because the chemistry is not there. When you have such long layoffs, you're apart from teammates. It's invariable that, you know, things are going to get degraded, right? You're not going to know exactly where your man is or when you should cut. But I think this all benefits the Pelicans because they're used to playing in this kind of chaotic environment to where they want to push the pace as fast as possible. And if you notice, they had probably roughly the same amount of turnovers as they did in the first eight games of this season as compared to the rest of the year, to where most teams saw significant drop-offs. So that just tells you they've lived with the mistakes. They've played through them. So I just feel like this benefits them because everybody else suddenly is going to have more mistakes. They're going to stay on that same level. And this faster pace plus the fact that we'll probably get into it, but they score a lot of easy points. They get to the free throw line. They shoot more than any other team when they've got Zion lineup inside the restricted area. So when you can score that easily, not have to rely on, you know, running a set offense, shooting long-range jumpers, basically being in a groove, I think that's just that really helps a team like the Pelicans who don't need all that. They don't require that for them to be successful. So it'll be interesting. But like I said, when you dig deep, this whole format in Orlando, the way it's setting up, it looks like it's really going to be in the New Orleans Pelicans' favor.
To boot, in terms of advantages for the Pelicans, they've just got so many weapons. You know, it's one night it's Drew, one night it's Brandon Ingram, next night it's Zion. And throughout this entirety of the season, in terms of chaos, beginning of the season, Pelicans didn't have Derek Favors, didn't have Zion Williamson. Zion got thrown into the lineup in the most recent 20 games. And prior to that, we had injuries to Brandon Ingram. I think they've just been going through chaos all season. So this is really nothing new to them.
Yeah, you nailed it on the head. I feel like when Favors was around, like in the first couple games of the year, and then when he came back initially, he didn't look at all like the Derek Favors we saw in Utah, the one that was healthy, being able just to move on the court better. And so that really hurt when you didn't have Zion. So when you're suddenly missing, you're starting power forward and center in a league where, you know, there's such a huge drop-off between actual legitimate starters and replacement players. Then you consider just the pace, everything goes into a game. Missing two guys at your starting lineup, that automatically puts you behind the eight ball. And as you mentioned, the Pelicans have suffered through, you know, injuries, not just to those two players. Ingram has had a banged up knee for close to a month to the last two months before the suspension. JJ Redick missed a good deal of time. Drew Holiday missed some time. Lonzo Ball did as well. So basically up and down the roster, somebody was missing at some point, it feels like.
that's so incredibly accurate. I'm laughing, but it's like almost not even funny.
You're laughing with tears. I know that.
Right. totally. Pels know that feeling all too well, especially early on this season, that 6-22 start. But in terms of going forward, in terms of how the Pels play the remainder of this regular season, have you heard anything in terms of what kind of shape Zion is in? We've talked about it on the podcast a little bit, talked about it more specifically yesterday. Andrew Lopez tweeted that Zion is ready to go. Have you heard anything in reference to Zion?
This whole time I've heard he's been working out and that he's looked good. So between, you know, you saw an interview with Ernie Johnson on TNT in late April, he talked about what he was doing, and you could see him physically yourself, and he looked a little thinner in the face to me, and I think a lot of people also noticed that. But he has been able to work out. Thanks to his injury, certain players, when the actual teams applied for rehab special privileges to where players could come in and work on their body's conditioning while everything else was shut down due to the coronavirus, these guys were allowed in, and Zion was one of those guys. So he's been able to stay up to par, and I think that's probably going to make all the difference in the world. He's going to be able to hit the ground running in Orlando, as to where before, say he hadn't had that access, you know, you would be worried about maybe him gaining some weight. You would be worried about him going suddenly from 0 to 100 when you saw all the precautions that the Pelicans were taking in bringing him back from the knee injury, right? He's just a bigger man. You have to take more precautions with the face of the future, right? A generational talent. So I think this bodes well. But everything I've been hearing, yeah, Elliot, it sounds really positive. We're going to be surprised by how good this guy is moving on the court.
Personally, and I'm speaking on behalf of basically all Pelicans fans, I'm sure, when I say this, I'm not just so freaking excited for basketball to start. I'm so excited to see a healthy Zion. I mean, he's been able to do rehab, which you can attest to his fitness and what he's been doing over break. But if anything, with the massive body that he's had or that he has, it's huge that he's been able to do rehab throughout this time as well.
Yeah, and here's the other thing people need to remember. When he came back, yeah, he put up 24 points, 7 rebounds, shot almost 60% from the field. He wasn't 100% for most of those games, right? Just like Lonzo Ball took several months to get ready before you start hearing him late December, hey, I'm getting my legs back underneath me. And so all of a sudden his play took off, right? His numbers improved. Well, Zion, he had the same thing in terms of not having those legs underneath him, but yeah, he performed. So what I'm going to be curious to see is how much better is he going to perform? Because he was held back. He said he couldn't really jump as high as he normally does and move on the court and had to basically take plays off, right, to where I shouldn't push myself on every play. That's what the coaching staff told him. Well, suddenly, let's say all those barriers are removed. We may see an even more explosive Zion doing more incredible things. So, man, I'm just as amped as you guys. I am very curious to see what this guy's going to be able to do in Orlando. And remember, he's still got 2 more months, right? We're not starting tomorrow. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You don't want to put expectations too high, or you know what I mean. But with what he was able to do, jumping just right in the middle of the season when everybody else had a 3-month head start, and for him to post the numbers he did, and he didn't feel 100%, man, I'm just telling you, I think we're going to see something even more special.
Now, you guys talked about it on the Bird Calls, you, Preston Ellis, and David Grubb. Do you think there's going to be any minutes restriction, given that he's been able to work out, given that he's been able to do rehab, at least in those first few games for Zion to get tuned up? Do you think there'll be like a 25-30 minute minutes restriction?
I'll be honest, I don't. I think with Aaron Nelson working with him probably almost, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, I mean, for how many months now, and he's the guy that's in charge of, you know, basically monitoring and restricting him. And the fact that those early restrictions when he first came back got lifted so quickly, right? He went from playing, what was it, 18 minutes against the Spurs, and you saw it ramp up really quickly to where he was playing 30 minutes, I think, about 5 games in. If he was able to do that, and if he's been working out now under the watchful eye, under one of the best in the business, Aaron Nelson, and the rest of his staff, I don't think there's going to be any restrictions. The only one you could possibly foresee, Elliot, is if on the back-to-back, right? We've been told there's going to be at least probably one back-to-back. You could see maybe New Orleans err on the side of caution in that scenario. But the rest, no. I think he's going to be playing over 30 minutes in all the games, but except, like I said, for maybe one back-to-back.
That'll be good in terms of health for everyone. But speaking of fitness and everything, did you see the picture of Nikola Jokic today?
That's amazing, yeah. You makes me wonder, is he sick? I mean, I hate to say it. He looks that much thinner when he's not playing, right? Not moving up and down the court.
It's like, what are you doing, dude? Get me on that health plan. I mean, I'm pretty skinny, but it was pretty.
Yeah,
I mean,
you remember how he started the season, how heavy he looked, right? Yeah, that's
right.
A big difference.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, I don't follow the Nuggets, you know, near to the extent that I follow the Pelicans, but he's not necessarily the most injury-prone guy in the world, but that's a big body moving up and down the floor and not getting hurt.
No, I know. And one thing we got to give to his credit, though, he did lose a lot of weight during the season while it was going on, right? There was a big difference between game one of the season and right before the shutdown. I know, though, the picture, it shows that he's lost a little bit more. The only thing you worry about in that scenario, and I've been told by this from trainers all over, if you lose too much weight, what are you losing exactly? Because you could lose muscle. You can lose those protective tendons, the strength in them, right? That was always the biggest concern with Zion. Everybody wants to cut his weight down. But every doctor, everybody that I know that's a specialist said, you can only take his weight down so far before you're actually increasing his risk for injury, because the rest of, you know, his protective gear in the body, so to speak, is going to be weaker. So that's, you know, I mean, granted, Jokic isn't a 300-pound boulder of right. your muscle like Zion is. But again, even with his stature, you still worry about it. So I'm sure the Denver Nuggets, they've got top, you know, medical staff and trainers and such, so they'll be able to look into it. But yeah, this is the one thing, Elliot, with somebody like Jokic. You know, I always thought he kind of used that girth to his advantage, especially banging down low. How will this affect his game now? You know, he'll be able to get up and down the court, but man, he's a center. He has to bang in the paint. How will he handle some of the bigger size in the league now at that looks like a lot lighter frame?
That's true. That's a good question. He's obviously an incredible passer for his size, so that's going to be – that won't be diminished by any means, but in terms of playing down low, that's a good point. I think that gives an advantage to Derek Favors should they match up at any point in the playoffs, which would be in the Western Conference Finals probably. I don't know where they would meet.
You're looking so far down the road.
Right.
But you bring up a good name. I think you should talk – we should talk about or mention at least Derek Favors. Because as I just said, he didn't look 100%. We heard that he has taken a lot of his time during this downtime to rest his body. And then he started working on his conditioning. So I think there's a great, great chance that we'll see Derek Favors at his healthiest, too, when the season returns. And boy, I think that would be huge, right? They rely on him so much, right? Yeah.
Oh.
You know, defensively.
Yeah. Right.
If he's now able to move a little bit more and has more explosion, that's going to make the Pelicans that much better.
I mean, just watching him go up and down the floor this season, he looked like he's 28, but he looked like an old 28-year-old.
He looked like a 38-year-old. You're not kidding. For half the games, he had no lift for most of the year, and I was commenting that on Twitter, I remember. There was really just no explosion whatsoever. He's never been a high leaper, you know, but he had some explosion, and there was just barely any at all this year.
Right. And I think that bodes well not only for the coming playoffs and regular season games, but the likelihood that he gets re-signed. Do you want Derek to be brought back next year? Do you think he'll be brought back next year?
110% yes. And I think he will for sure. I think the Pelicans will go that route. It makes all the sense in the world. They have his bird rights. And so with caps, space going to be non-existent to begin with, but in fact, the salary caps are going to be coming down most likely. At least there's going to be something done. Maybe the NBA is going to help buffer in terms of not letting all the losses financially affect it. Still, everything's going to be lower, but it's essentially you want the Pelicans to spend money where there's greater need. And so they'll just have exceptions to use, and you don't want to spend the $8 million or whatever the full mid-level ends up being on a replacement for Favors. No, you re-sign him. Because he impacted winning. You know, I had this talk with Antonio Daniels. People are giving grief about possibly seeing Derek Favors re-signed. Well, guess what? The Pelicans starting lineup was the best in terms of those five-man lineups that played 200 minutes or more, right? They had that much a better advantage from in points, offense and defense. So Derek Favors was a big part of that. And when he wasn't in the lineup, you saw the holes, right? Jahlil Okafor, Jackson Hayes, they can't handle it or weren't ready. So they need to re-sign him. I think they will. And I think they'll get him at something cheaper. He's making $17 million this year, but I think they can get him for probably about 2 years, $25 million, somewhere in that range, maybe go up to $28. And then I think that would be fair. I think they're going to need somebody to fill in those minutes for at least a couple more years because Jackson Hayes, he still has a long ways to go before he can be entrusted to carry big starting-type minutes.
Definitely. And for Favors, I think he's at a point in his career where he's not necessary. I mean, there's guys at the end of their career where they just want to load up prior to retirement. And Favors is in a position to where, I mean, he's made plenty of money in his NBA career. And now it's about winning. I think now it's about going out and winning an NBA title for Favors. And not necessarily that the Pelicans give him the best chance in the entire league, but they give him a pretty solid chance with this young core, at least in the extended future.
Yeah, there's not a lot of teams out there that would probably even give him the starting job, right? The opportunity that he has here in New Orleans. And the fact that everything from I've heard, he loves it here. He loves the guys in the locker room. He loves being a mentor to the youngsters on the squad. It seems like a perfect scenario. And I just think that, you know, you need some veterans. You need some of these guys that are going to be transition type of players for when the young core grows. You need vets still with them to help the team advance, right? These guys aren't ready for the limelight or to carry any kind of load. So you need the Jrue Holidays, the J.J. Redicks, and the Derek Favors. So So I think it just it works in both favors for both Derek Favors and the Pelicans. I did not mean to go that route, but it came out that way.
We got there. That's okay. I agree with you. Definitely. I think that Favors, I mean, he probably likes being in the limelight a little bit too, because over the last few years in Utah, it's been he's the guy who's not Rudy Gobert, you know? So I think this is great for Jackson Hayes as well to continue to develop and learn a little bit, especially on the defensive side of the ball, beef up a little bit, and before he's thrusted into the starting lineup. But speaking of big men in the NBA, you probably know that LaMarcus Aldridge is out for the rest of the regular season, listeners. But Ollie, do you think this effectively takes the Spurs out of contention for that 8-9 position?
Absolutely. And I know what Greg Popovich can do with probably any cast of players you give him. And the fact that San Antonio has, what, not missed a playoffs in 22 years, something along those lines. But losing to LaMarcus when the team was already, you know, they were subpar. They started off pretty well this year. I can't remember exactly, but I want to say they came out of the gates like 5-3, somewhere along the lines. But ever since then, it's just been steadily downhill. They just don't have enough talent on that team to compete. And when you lose the best player, you just don't see it, right? I mean, he put up 32 points, 14 rebounds in Zion's debut to really push the Spurs to the win in that game, right? They got some really timely shooting, I remember, from Bellinelli and several others. But LaMarcus was such a constant, you know. And if you remove him, you know, I just don't see it, man. I know Pop can do – he's a miracle worker, but they just don't have enough. So you effectively, I think, have to remove them from legitimate talk and trying to grab that playoff play-in spot on either the 8th or 9th seed in that tournament. That should happen, right?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, they got DeMar DeRozan, and I mean, give Patty Mills and DeJounte Murray as much credit as you want, but it's just not to the degree that the, as far as talent goes, to the degree that the Blazers have, or the Pelicans, or the Grizzlies, or, I mean...
You know, teams score 110 points a game, right, on average now in the NBA. Where are the Spurs going to get those points from?
You're asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
I'm sure they're asking themselves that right now.
Right. Looking at that schedule, they did start off 5-3, 6-3, if you want to add in that extra victory. But then they lost 8 games in a row. So that was a quick fall off. And in that series, where that amount of games where they went 6-3, their wins were against the Knicks, the Wizards, the Trailblazers, the Warriors, and then they actually beat the Thunder. But this is just not the classic Spurs teams that we've seen from the past. And you said it, Popovich is noted for being able to get a lot out of, you know, a paperclip and a rubber band on his bench, but it's just not there this year. You've got to have talent, and the talent just isn't there other than DeMar DeRozan. And he's a mid-range shooter in a three-point and dunk league. So you're not just not going to get that quite out of the Spurs this year. Now, I think I heard you talk about it on Pro Pels Talk this week. Do you believe the Trailblazers are a threat to the Pelicans in that 8-9 spot? I know they've got that advantage in terms of win percentage, but do you think that the Trailblazers are a legitimate spot or in a legitimate position to take over the Pelicans?
Yeah, my biggest fear is that the Grizzlies, you know, hold water and they win either 3 or 4 of those 8 games. So basically nobody chasing them is going to overtake them for that 8th seed. So it all comes down to the 9th. And you already mentioned the Pelicans are effectively one game in back of Portland. So they got to win one additional game. And when you just factor in what Damian Lillard does in clutch time minutes, you know, he led Portland last year, the Western Conference Finals, has Portland in the playoffs 6 straight years. And, you know, CJ McCollum is a certifiable 20, 25, maybe even 30 points a game, depending on the scenario. And you're getting Jusuf Nurkić back. They fully expect him healthy and ready to go. Their starting center, who I think was their third best player last year in their run. So him being out for the entire season really hurt them. And they also had Zach Collins go out, I think, first or second week of this season, and he's a really good bench player, kind of provides what Melly does, but differently. He's a better defender, but he's not as good of a three-point shooter. But again, he's a big piece to what they do. So when you're getting suddenly that much healthier, you've given Dame some rest, CJ some rest, and all that experience they have, and you give them one game edge, yeah, that's my biggest fear. That's going to be the biggest obstacle for New Orleans in getting in the play-in tournament, hopefully the playoffs.
You said Nurkic is probably the third best player in Portland. He might be one of the more underrated players in the league. That dude brings a lot of value to the table.
Yeah, I do. And it's funny, from New Orleans' perspective, you wouldn't figure it, right? Because 2 years ago in the playoffs, Anthony Davis and what New Orleans did, both to Dame and Nurkic, it was incredible. But, no, he's a much better player than just that little four-game glimpse you got. And,
right.
I just think that, boy, the only thing you wonder about is he may not be sharp, right? Hasn't played all year. But from what I heard, conditioning standpoint, he's going to be 100%. So if he can get going, because he's a good passer, right? He knows how to get Damian open, right? He's great for screen and roll. Then he's a good defender, good rebounder. So he brings a lot more to the table than Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah, which is not necessarily that, right? Not necessarily that difficult to do. Hassan Whiteside is one of those OG centers from the 80s, basically, where he can post up down low and maybe do a little bit.
But he's taking blocks and rebounds, man. He's such a me-first guy. I mean, I hate to say that. That's the reason why nobody likes him. Teammates have had issues with him, you know. He's just looking for himself and making that, cashing that big check. I mean, that's the word around the league. That's not me saying it. Everybody kind of knows that about him.
I mean, take the quote that he had when he first started to rise to stardom in, I don't know how long ago it was, but that interview after the game, he had some stupid stat line, like 20-20 or something like that. And he said, I'm just trying to improve my 2K rating, which at the time was pretty funny.
Yeah. Forgot about
that. I mean, that just falls into that description right there.
No, I was just going to say also, it's kind of funny how Joel Embiid, right, he always makes it his mission to destroy him whenever they square up and match up. So, yeah, Whiteside's not too liked around the league.
Right,
let's just leave it at that.
So, speaking of, not-so-skilled guys, what type of minutes do you suppose that Kenrich Williams will be getting now that he's healthy, now that we're entering the playoffs? And actually, I'm going to rescind that question. I just put together that article on the Bird Rights that came out today. What were your thoughts on the article? I know you said when I brought the idea up to you that we needed to get something like that on the site. What were your thoughts on the article?
No, it's timely, because you couldn't have been more correct in your assessment that Kenrich did not show the Pelicans enough this year. He's in a contract year. This team is suddenly laden with talent. They've got a lot of incoming picks. So anybody that's going to be even towards, the end of the bench and they're cheap on cheap contracts, they have to prove themselves, because this team's really going places. So you have to be a contributor. You have to be able to show growth. And he took a huge step back, right? His confidence went from maybe 30% to 0%. And you noted that beautifully in the article, by where his percentages just fell off a cliff from last year to the start of this year to where he basically ended up before he hurt his back, I think, sometime in early January, late December, whenever that was. So, yeah, I mean, these 8 games are so crucial for him just to get a glimpse and prove himself that, hey, I need to tease the Pelicans that I'm really better than what I showed, and this is who I really am. So the biggest question, though, and you were getting ready to ask me this, though, will he get minutes? And, I find it really hard to see. I mean, outside some maybe some matchup-based scenarios, you don't think he's going to make that tighter playoff type of rotation that Alvin Gentry is likely to employ.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, this team goes 8-9 deep. I think it'd be forcing it to throw Kenrich Williams in there.
Yeah, so you got the starters, Elliott. Then who you got off the bench? Because my first three is Redick, Harden, and Melly, right?
Right. I mean, Jackson Hayes, to throw him in there, get a few minutes.
Yeah, get some minutes. But I'm saying overall, I just know that, coaches like to go to 8, rarely even 9 in playoff, like must-win type scenario. So unless Biggie thinks Jax can do something just for a minute or two, I don't think he'll even barely get on the court.
Fair enough. And I guess I'm thinking if players aren't necessarily super fit, to start the season.
Yeah, that's going to be what gets them maybe on the court, right? Especially in the back-to-back, is watching minutes of these guys.
Right, exactly. And you made reference to those statistics. And if you want to see more stuff, you can check out the article on the Bird Rights. But this is just, this has to be noted. The guy shot 37.5% from the free throw line this year and 26% from three. That is atrocious.
That's not an NBA player. I mean, no. Let's be real. I know it's small sample size and all, but man, you saw the way his confidence bottomed out. I mean, look at his splits in December. I'm trying to bring it up right now, but I remember it being like even worse than what you just read to me. Yeah, so in 283 minutes in December, he shot 20.8% from the field, 13.5% from the three-point range, and 20% from the free throw line. I mean,
wow.
You can't play a guy like that. I don't care what he gives you defensively or on the glass. You just can't play that big of a net zero. Or I should say negative. What am I saying? Zero. He's at negative offensively.
Yeah. You know, I tried to give him a little bit of a niche in the article for what he could provide, that, you know, what the Pelicans need right now. I think that's their most glaring need on the roster as it's currently constructed, is a Dennis Rodman type. And I don't trust him to do that, because in a position like that, you have to be confident in your abilities. If there's any position, I mean, that's a big position where you got to be confident to throw your body around, get after loose balls, and be intense. And I just don't see him bringing that to the table.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. I mean, look, the coaches have to play to win 100%. There's no more development that's going to be upcoming. So you're right. If he doesn't get on the court with those when other players need to rest, just simply because they don't want to overtax these guys that are just coming back from such a long layoff, then it's just so hard to foresee any scenario where he's going to be given even a chance to prove himself.
Right. And so with that said, going forward, do you think the Pelicans go out into free agency to get a guy like that, or do you think they roll going into this next season? Do you think they try to go with Zylan Cheatham or Didi Luzada?
Well, you're going to need to replace exactly what you wrote about. I think you desperately need a guy that's at least 6'6", 6'7", up to like 6'9", who can at least somewhat get in front of a Giannis or LeBron James, even a Paul George. These longer guys, and I wrote an article about that, I want to say like a month ago, and these taller, multifaceted, big-time scores, they destroy the Pelicans. Yeah, they're all-stars, and they put up these great averages, but when you looked at the numbers, they were even that much better, and they barely even missed, right? I mean, it was some insane stuff. Jason Tatum, Pascal Siakam, they all took the Pelicans to the woodshed because they had nobody that could stay in front of them. Brandon Ingram, he's still too slight a frame. You hope that someday he gets a little bit stronger, puts a little bit more weight on. And, of course, Zion wasn't around, and even when he came back, you couldn't throw him out in the fire like that, because this guy's just learning where he should be positioning himself in the most fundamental basic of stances and positioning. So to ask him to suddenly guard LeBron James isn't going to happen. So they do need to sign somebody. I've got my eyes on maybe somebody like even Maurice Harkless. I've read and heard good things about him. You need to get somebody that's going to be in the price range, which is going to be the Pelicans' mid-level. But yeah, they're going to have to address that, you know, that spot on the roster. And I just don't think you can bring Kenrich back.
Yeah, same. And I think it'd be a good article idea, and I'll run this by it later. but to think of guys who could fill that role this upcoming year, we talked about it prior on the podcast as well with Justin Napoli. He had mentioned Myers Leonard. And then a name that I just saw at the top of this list of free agents is Serge Ibaka. Now, I doubt that he leaves the Pelicans. He's also getting paid, the Raptors. He's also getting paid $21 million this year. So he's not necessarily going to be in that price range. But I saw the name Mo Harkless. I like that a lot as well. And then Myers Leonard. And now, I put this in the article just to make reference to what Kenrich Williams could be, or what we would desire him to be for the Pelicans. And I said Andre Roberson. Like the super worthless on 2K, but provides a lot of value on the defensive end of the floor in the league. Do you think it'd be worth it to try to go out and get a guy like Roberson and pay him that mid-level exception, considering he's coming off that ACL injury?
No, honestly, I don't. I think you need to get somebody a little bit more proven. Coming off major injury, that's just such a huge red flag for me, having watched New Orleans for so many years and dealing with those type of players that seemingly never worked out. You know, this is the land of where, you know, if you weren't hurt, you were going to get hurt. But if you were already hurt, then we weren't going to see a sudden rebirth, right? So, no, I think it's best to stay away from this type of gamble, especially if you've got other options. Like I said, that's why I point out Maurice Harkless, because he's got a track record both in Portland and with the Clippers before they unceremoniously cast him to the Knicks last season in a trade where he played like meaningless minutes, right? But before that, everybody raved about his intensity. And what he could do is also shoot the three-point ball a little bit. So I feel like that's who you need to chase. That's where Roberson, he won't give you even that three-point shot. And in today's NBA, like I said, you can't have somebody not producing at all on that end, right? You need them to be able to do at least one thing.
And to boot, Mo Harkless is 27 years old. So he's got a few more years left of his prime. And then another name that I've been hearing a lot in terms of filling that void would be Jay Crowder, who is 30 years old, but he's only making $7 million this year, so probably could fill that position in terms of cap space. Is he a guy that you think would be good?
I think so, from everything I've heard. I know that he wanted kind of a bigger role in a few of his previous stops, so that gives you a little bit of cause for concern, because whoever comes in, it's going to be not handed, like, say, a Josh Hart role where you're going to see, on average, 25, 26, 27 minutes a game. So, I don't know. It has to be the guy that's going to fit whatever role he's going to be given, right? He's got to come in with the mentality of, I feel like Derek Favors exhibits. So, I don't want to say yes or no to Jay Crowder because I don't know for certain. But, yeah, on his face, he looks like a good guy, because when he's been on successful teams, boy, he's been really good, and he is a bulldog. So, yeah, you want that kind of guy. I hope the New Orleans Pelicans look and add somebody like him if it's not him.
And three-point shooting never hurts, adding a little bit of that from Jay Crowder as well. Now looking to the future, I did mention Zylan and Didi, and I've been hearing a lot about Zylan on Twitter. People think he's got a high ceiling, and of course, Didi, Griff absolutely is in love with Didi Luzada. What are you thinking that the Pels will get from these two next year?
Well, I think that Didi will probably be given a chance, at least be brought to training camp to earn himself a roster spot. I'm not 100% certain that they're just going to go ahead and give him a contract and bring him in, because, you know, while he did do fairly well in Australia this past year, he had his ups and downs. And when I watched some footage, and I just don't feel like he's there yet. But again, you're not bringing him over to be, I think, a 30-minute type of guy. I think you can bring him along maybe in that Frank Jackson type of role. Again, Frank Jackson, he's a guy that maybe needs to be talked about whether he'll come back. But I think there is space for Didi, because one thing I've heard about him, he may be the toughest guy, one of the toughest guys, if they were to bring him over already automatically on this roster. He's honestly, he has no fear. He plays with no fear. And you saw that in the summer league, right? And you saw that a little bit in the NBL too. So I think he makes all the sense in the world. If they see that in him and they can see that he can handle his own in other areas, then yeah, he makes for a smart signing. As for Zylan Cheatham, I want to believe in this guy, and I know what he did in the G League. But I'll tell you what, I keep going back to what I did see in summer league, and I was thoroughly disappointed after reading a lot about what he did over, I think it was Arizona State, right? He had a nice four-year career. He even progressed enough to where he had a really, it seemed like a potent three-point shot. But in summer league, he just didn't do much. You know, he was always out of place a little bit, couldn't shoot the ball. He was even missing, like, finger rolls. But, you know, it is summer league. You write it off to maybe somebody being a little nervous, a little too amped up. So I just hope that he does show a little bit more. But, you know, he's going to have to earn it. He's one of those guys that he has to earn that he can play on this level, because everybody can play in the G League and other areas and look really explosive and good doing it. But can they also do that in the NBA? So I think he'll be given a chance to come next training camp. But I'm curious to see if he actually does earn a spot, because I can't lean one way or the other yet on him.
Fair enough. And I've just been seeing about how he's the next guy, and I was just like, I'm a little skeptical. If he's the next guy, why isn't he playing right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he went undrafted, so, I mean, he's not no shoo-in. I don't know why anybody would call him a shoo-in. Yeah. Just, I think, people getting a little ahead of themselves, getting excited, you know? It's always easy to hope and project, right?
Oh, so easy. Yeah, especially when you're when you've been a ride or die fan for the Pels, and there hasn't been a whole lot of hope in the last 10 or so years. Now looking back to the situation at hand, we've been hearing that coaches over the age 65 and older might not be allowed to play in the playoffs, or play. might not be able to coach during the playoffs and the remainder of this regular season because of the coronavirus. So it's looking like Chris Finch might be a stand-in come these eight games and the playoffs. What are your thoughts with Chris Finch probably going to be taken over here, or maybe taken over?
Well, I don't say I'll just address it right now. I don't think that's going to happen. I really, truly think that Alvin is going to be there in Orlando at the game start. I know that there was that concern about his age, but I think the NBA has really backed off of that stance to where they're just looking at age as being just a single denominator, and whether somebody goes to Orlando. It really matters, I think, your health, right, up and your track record and predisposition and any pre-existing conditions that a player – or excuse me, any personnel that's going to attend this bubble has. So from what I understand, Alvin doesn't have any, and he was really adamant and upset when this news first came out, and he claims he's 100%, and he's not at any greater risk than anybody younger than him. So I think that's exactly the route the NBA is going to go, and they're going to allow these types. As long as, like I said, there's no skeleton, right, sitting in the closet where it may be a problem, then I think they'll allow even coaches over the age of 65.
Fair enough. And you can't blame him for being upset like that. Been there through the whole season, dedicated to this team, and from what we can tell as members of the media, he's beloved by the players. He's a player's coach.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Everybody loves Alvin across the league, from media to, you know, the players, as you just mentioned, to other coaches, league office. You know, Alvin's got a lot of positions within the league office, serving on a bunch of committees. His opinion is highly valued across this league, and everybody just loves him. He's such a great dude at the end of the day. And I'll admit it, I've never talked to somebody of his stature and position to where he's so easygoing, so likable, and so revealing to somebody that he really doesn't even know. He's that with like that way with whether he's just seen you once in the media session or a bunch of times like myself. So he's just a great, great guy. Mm.
Good stuff. Well, one more question for you before we let you go, Ollie. There's been some rustling throughout the league about whether certain players, they haven't named any names, but I can't remember the number that's on it right now either, but a good portion of players aren't necessarily super excited about this idea of playing in Orlando in this bubble. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's probably should have been foreseeable for any number of reasons, right? You're bringing in teams that don't realistically have a good chances or odds, whatever you want to call it, of just even making these play-in tournaments. So Phoenix Suns, Washington Wizards, and especially the guys towards the end of those benches, I mean, why should they have to ramp up, leave their families for what would be at least 6-7 weeks, and then put themselves, you know, at risk of contracting the coronavirus while this world has all this, you know, racial issues that it has to go through and figure out? So for a variety of reasons, yeah, players are just hesitant on just going inside this bubble, to where some say, you know, might have to stay for 2.5 months while, like I said, a pandemic's going on, and then they would be worried possibly about having to bring their families in, because you know they're going to want to. Even though you may be putting them at risk, I mean, I can't imagine anybody wants to sit there alone for up to 2.5 months when it could only be 7 weeks. And like I said, these times are just so unusual because of all this. You know, and rightly slow. All the racial injustices have come to the forefront. And so players now are looking at this. Are we doing maybe a disservice by starting up and playing games while this is all going on in the background? Fortunately, though, there's some voices now coming out. For instance, I think Garrett Temple, he revealed something very revealing today, one of the good veterans in the league. And he's also the vice president of the National Basketball Players Association. And he said, basically, look at it this way. If you want to really help out fellow African Americans, the thing you could do is actually go out and earn that paycheck. Don't say no to that money, because there's so few that of their like, and Black Americans have a position where they can make that type of money. And then you can also do so much good with that, because he pointed to, look what LeBron's doing and others. So I think that at the end of the day, it's just players were talking and voicing their concerns over a wide range of issues. You know, everybody's going to be worried about starting up something unprecedented while living in such unprecedented times. So I think it'll all work out, though. You know, this is a very cohesive league. Adam Silver runs a really good ship. And so I think they'll figure it all out. At the end of the day, the players are going to want their money. They'll probably feel satisfied with it, you know, being such an increased risk, both for health, safety, and, of course, just looking like, you know, not being the best of images in the public eye with everything going on. I think all those concerns will be, you know, taken care of. They'll go away enough to where all these players will agree to go.
Ollie Cosell, everyone, editor-in-chief at The Bird Writes. Excellent, excellent stuff today from Ollie. Ollie, thanks so much for joining us. How can we follow you on Twitter, see some of your stuff with The Bird Writes?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ollie. Sure, you can catch all of anything I do on Twitter under my full name. That's Ollie Cosell. But usually we're also very heavy at SB Nation. So I don't post on Twitter as much as a lot of other people like to do, but I like to do all my talking through either podcasts or on articles. So catch all that over at SB Nation under one word, www.thebirdrights.com.
There we go. Excellent stuff. Ollie has been everywhere and back. So we're going to let him go, but great, great stuff, Ollie. I told David this last week to go take a nap, and I think you've deserved it this week as well.
It's almost Friday, so yeah. Hey, he's got basketball around the corner, so I'm excited too, man. I really hope they can pull this off.
There we go. Thanks, Ollie. So there it is, Pels fans. Super fun podcast with Ollie Cosell of The Bird Writes, editor-in-chief of The Bird Writes. And I made reference to it on the podcast a little bit, but Ollie made an appearance on Pro Pels Talk earlier this week. He's also been a recurring guest on The Bird Calls podcast. If you want to hear more from Ollie, you can head over to those podcasts here, whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, etc. Now, for this podcast here at Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans, if you want to continue to contribute to this podcast, you can head over to Twitter, go to @ElliotClough, and you're going to find polls and other ways that you can engage with the podcast. You respond to those polls, you respond to any tweets pertaining to the Pelicans and this podcast, and you're going to get featured on this, not necessarily this episode, but going forward. In the Pelicans, in the Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans on this podcast. And of course, you can always hashtag WhatThePel in order to ask questions or throw out some thoughts to us as well. And if you are here listening on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and any other platform as well, go ahead and subscribe or follow, leave a rate and review.
Do it!
If you can, the more you do that, the more quality content we are going to be able to get you here on Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans, and that just really helps us out a lot. So we greatly, greatly appreciate it if you go ahead and do that. Go follow Believe on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you can check out a plethora of the podcast network's other podcasts on Believe.com, or you can head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you do listen to your podcast. Once again, you can check out some more Pelicans coverage by yours truly and some other qualified writers on FanSided's Hoops Habit page, or of course, The Bird Writes as well. Do not forget, head over to Twitter, give me a follow, and we'll be interacting with you there. And of course, make sure to leave a rate and review on iTunes or any other podcasting platform that lets you do so. That would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So, once again, I am your host, Elliot Clough, and this was Believe in the New Orleans Pelicans.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.